Now, it was just about this time that this wonderful, wonderful mythic tale develops of Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh was a king, and he had a great friend, Enkidu, who died. And his friend came to him and said, "The realm of death is terrible. Death is terrible." So Gilgamesh decides to go in quest of the plant of immortality. This is one of the earliest of the great quest for immortality myths, of which we now have myriads in the world. He went past many dangers and came at last to the cosmic ocean that surrounds the world. And there was a kind of sibyl there, a kind of goddess named Siduri. And she said, "Gilgamesh, where are you going?" And he said, "I'm going to seek immortality." And she said, "Immortality is not for men." The old story was that it was for men. "Live in the world, enjoy the wife of your bosom, enjoy the little child whom you hold by the hand. Take pleasure in the things that are for man." "No," said Gilgamesh, "I'm going on." So she gave him instructions whom to accost for passage across the ocean of the world. And the ferryman took him in his boat and warned him, "Don't touch the waters." He came beyond the waters to an island where Utnapishtim and his wife lived. Utnapishtim were the Babylonian Noah. They had survived many floods. They were living there, as it were, immortal. And they gave him instruction. They said, "When you go back, dive to the bottom of the cosmic ocean, and you will find there a plant. It will scratch your hand. It will be painful, but that's it." And he did so. He dove, and with great pain, brought this plant to the surface. He was so exhausted that he couldn't eat it at the time, and he was rowed to shore, and he went to sleep, and while he was asleep, guess what happened? A serpent came and ate the plant. Now, this is why serpents can cast their skin and acquire new life. One of the fundamental images in all mythology is the serpent as symbol of the rebirth principle. The serpent can encircle the world. The serpent can shed its skin and be reborn. The serpent in this manner is associated with the moon, which also sheds its skin and is reborn. You can see the shadow come over the moon, and then it sheds it again. Shadow and sheds. These symbols of serpent and moon dying and resurrecting became and were, for the old societies, promises, so to say, symbols of rebirth. But with Gilgamesh, man is removed from that, and the serpent power is not his power. Now, I've spoken of the first type of natural society where man could identify with the divine. The second type of natural society where he was separated from the divine. Now I'm going to speak of a third, where he tries to recover and does succeed in recovering in a myth, connection with the divine. This is the great mythology of the ancient Persians, of Zarathustra. The first view is represented in the mythology of ancient Sumer. The second view of man as separate from the gods and a slave of the gods, for whom immortality is not intended, belongs to the period of about 2300 from then on, the period of Akkad and Babylon. And now we come to a considerably later date, about the middle of the first millennium BC, this of Persia. This myth you will recognize. It is a myth of two gods. One, the god of light and goodness and justice. The other, the god of darkness and evil and aggression. The god of light, Ahura Mazda, our bulbs, Mazda bulbs used to be named after him. The god of darkness, Angra-Mainyu. Ahura Mazda created a nature world, a good nature world with men and animals in it. And the evil power came and infected them with evil intentions, with evil impulses, so that we have a myth of the fall. In all of us, therefore, who were created good, there is a principle of evil in contest with the good. The end of the world will come when the good principle annihilates the evil. The first man was named Gaio-Mart. He is precisely the counterpart of Adam who fell. And Angra-Mainyu is the counterpart of Satan, or the serpent in the garden who tempted man to fall. After 12,000 years, there came Zarathustra, or Zoroaster, the prophet of God. He was Gaio-Mart back again in perfection, as Christ is the second Adam. With him, goodness begins to triumph over darkness, and ultimately, at the end of the world, there will be another messianic figure called Saoshiant who will enter the world. There will take place the final cosmic battle, and the world will be redeemed. It will be the ideal, perfect world again, which was created in the beginning. Now, this is a whole new notion. The notion, I would say, of a progressive line in the history of the world. Creation, a fall, and a process toward redemption. You recognize that this is the messianic idea that has come to us through biblical sources. The older view was of a continually recurrent cycle. The world goes through cycles of gold, silver, bronze, and iron ages to be reborn gold, silver, bronze, iron, on and on and on. There is no end, there is no beginning. In contrast to that, we now have a mythology of progressive thinking. For Zarathustra, man had free will. He was to choose his participation with the good and fight for the good. I've tried to suggest three mythologies. One, of man's identity with the eternal principle, which he has only to seek within himself or to seek within his society. Next, the mythology of man's separation from God and from divinity, and the necessity for him to serve God according to God's designs, but not with any hope of himself recovering perfection, because he never had it. And then third, this quite wonderful myth of the perfection of man lost in life and time, but recovered through virtuous effort. Ahura Mazda and Angra Mainyu represent cosmic principles. The gods of the other mythologies represent cosmic principles also.